This is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Powered through the Alaska Airlines Studio.
Streaming live on the 710 Sports app and at 710sports.com.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
It is Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. We've been looking forward to this conversation for a while. We had such an awesome time talking to this guy on the field before a game this past season. One of our favorite interviews of the year, Dave. We've talked about it afterwards and really just sort of reflected on what a fantastic year it was for the Seattle Mariners and this player in particular, who is now joining us on the Emerald Queen Casino Sportsbook Hotline. The one, the only, Mitch Haniger is here. Mitch, how are you, man?
Doing great. Thanks for the kind words. Appreciate it. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah, and our listeners are in for a treat because you've agreed to talk nothing but MMA with me for the next 20 minutes, right?
Oh, yeah. Whatever you want.
We still need to do that, by the way. You and I just sit down and have a conversation about MMA, but we'll do that another time.
Definitely.
And we'll get into what's going on with you. The 87th Annual Sports Star of the Year Awards presented by the Seattle Sports Commission are happening May 26th. You're up for you're one of seven nominees for the Men's Sports Star of the Year. We'll get into that in just a moment. But, you know, we were just talking during the break and sort of reflecting over the article you wrote for the Players Tribune, which was titled Dear Mariners Fans, which it was awesome. And I'm just curious, A, what were you prompted to do that? Was that something you wanted to do? Because you're kind of a private guy. We don't hear a ton from you. You don't do a lot of media. There's not a lot of you out there in the public to consume. So was this something you had to sort of be coerced into doing, or is it something you wanted to do?
I definitely wasn't coerced into doing it. The Players Tribune had reached out and asked if I wanted to do a piece. And as soon as they reached out and asked me, I jumped at the opportunity because I was really excited to kind of be able to craft whatever I wanted to say. And a lot of times, you know, when they ask certain news outlets ask to do an interview with you, things get kind of cherry picked, or there's certain questions they ask and they plan on using and other ones they don't. And with that one, I kind of get to say whatever I wanted to say. And that's what was so exciting to me, because I could really try to get across everything I wanted to say. And hopefully everyone like the article, and I think it was really important to look back on the season and you know, thank the fans and thank them for all the support over the years, and with also looking back and saying, like, we fell short, and that this isn't a success. That last year's season was a good step forward, but it wasn't, in my mind, it wasn't a successful season because we didn't make the playoffs and we didn't win the World Series, and that's our main goal.
Yeah, I thought that really came through, Mitch. It was really well done, and you know, I think Mariner fans really appreciated that, because you know, you were thanking them for their turnout and everything, but also letting everybody know that there's a lot more in store for this team. And you know, you've got to be really excited in this off season going in after a season like you said, you didn't do what you set out to do, but feels like you're on the verge of it, this team.
I agree. Yeah. And you know, Robbie Ray signing and the Adam Frazier trade were definitely two impact moves that we made that are setting ourselves up to for it to be a good off season. And you know, I think we still need some more big upgrades, and I know you know, adding a couple more players should put us over the top, and I think this game is really difficult. It's really difficult to win a World Series, and I think when you have that timing and that window of young prospects that are should be ready soon, but also guys that we need, guys that come in that can produce this year. And although we have great prospects that I'm looking forward to, you know, putting on the Mariners uniform, they still are unproven. And I think the more guys that we can get with a steady track record of playing against the best and the best in the world at the MLB level, the better. And then we supplement those prospects in with those guys. And I feel like that's our best chance of success.
You know, Mitch, one of the things you wrote about in that Players Tribune story, which I would recommend all of our listeners check out and read, it's really, really well done. But there was the one thing of all that you talk about, your injuries, you talk about your struggles, things like that. The thing that jumped out to me that I wasn't aware of is that when you were in AA, you weren't getting the reps. You weren't getting the time out there on the field the way you wanted to. And you made the request to be sent down, which seems so counterintuitive. And I think you even said, hey, some would look at this as career suicide, but just so you could get reps, so you could get the at-bats. Do you know any other players that have done anything like that? And was there ever a moment where you thought, what did I just do?
I don't know any other guys off the top of my head, but for me, I've always worked really hard and have a lot of belief in my work ethic, and I get a lot of confidence from there. And I know that if I knew I wasn't going to reach the big leagues by sitting on the bench in Double A. So for me, it was the only option was to go down and prove to myself and prove to everybody else that I was a good player and that I was an MLB type player. And I knew if I had the opportunity, I would be able to show that. And so for me, it was like, this is my way out. This is my way basically up the ladder. I got to go back a step, but it should propel me forward faster. And I'm really lucky and thankful for the Diamondbacks and Mike Bell in particular, who recently passed away this year. He was our player development, head player development, and he agreed to send me down. And I ended up getting my reps and proving to myself and to the team that I was, you know, better than I think they initially thought. And then it all worked out pretty well.
Mitch, I remember meeting you when you first came in town in 2016. I think I came up to you because my son also went to San Luis Obispo. And, you know, I just remember looking at you, and now I'm reflecting on that because, you know, where you are right now as far as your career is probably, you know, I mean, you're probably wanting to strive for more always, but, you know, you've made it. But it was quite a path, you know, when you reflect on how you got there. And you know, it's just interesting how, and I don't know if you would answer this way. I kind of went through a similar adversity as an athlete, but I wouldn't trade it because I felt like it made me better. And, you know, it didn't go exactly the way you wanted with the injuries and things like that. But are you to the point where you can look back on the injuries and all that training and all those lonely workouts that you had for a year or two that really helped you?
Oh, absolutely. I feel like mentally I'm stronger than ever, and I know I can get through anything, and I'm prepared for anything. And, yeah, absolutely. I'm super grateful for everything that's happened, and all the sleepless nights and the struggles made me who I am today. And I feel like it's also made me a lot more compassionate for guys that are going through injuries and kind of offering my advice, and whether it's help mentally or even physically with some things guys going through injuries should be focusing on. And hopefully at the end of the day, I can just help more teammates and help more guys I play with that might be struggling after a big injury or a big surgery. And I think it's just another tool in my toolbox to where I can be a better teammate.
Hey, Mitch Haniger is our guest here with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle. What was the end of the season like for you? I mean, that was unlike as a fan, as somebody who's been in the city for a long time, long-suffering Mariner fan. The electricity around this team and the run you guys went on and the prospects of man, they might actually make it to the postseason. I mean, to win 90 games and have it end the way that it did, and I know it didn't end the right way, but just a packed stadium where it was just so loud, so electric. We hadn't seen that here in years. What was that like for you being out on the field in the middle of that?
Kind of hard to put in words, to be honest with you, still even now when I look back on it. But, man, the excitement that we had in the locker room just coming to the field every day in September, you know, I've never experienced that before. I've never experienced a season going down to the wire and playing for something way bigger than yourself. And a lot of, you know, in the past couple of years with the Mariners, we've kind of been knocked out a little bit earlier than, you know, the last day of the season. So, you know, guys start looking at their phones and the calendars and seeing when they can go back home and what they're going to do in the off season. But it wasn't any of that, and like I said earlier, the goal is to win a World Series, and everybody was pulling in the same in direction for that, and it was incredible. The buzz around the city, the fans every night. I hope that's what every game at T-Mobile Park is like from here on out, and I hope that we're providing that type of atmosphere all the way through September and even October and all the way to and through the World Series.
Did you get a feeling from the crowd that they just expected you to come up with something big, because you kind of went on a tear in the second to the last game of the season? You go 4 for 5, you drove in 5 runs, hit the home run. I mean, just an electric night for you individually, but it just seemed like when you stepped up to the plate, I as a fan just felt like, all right, yeah, he's gonna do something here. Like, if you didn't do it, it felt kind of weird. Did you kind of get that sense that it's flowing and they expect me to get this done right?
Yeah.
Now
yeah, and like I said, I mean, gone through a lot, and I've been dreaming and looking forward to those situations for a long time, and I feel like I've done a lot of visualization and mental prep for those, and it's kind of funny how everything kind of seemed to unfold the way I wanted it to, and although, you know, ultimately didn't make the playoffs, and I just remember on Friday night, that last series we had, the Angels in town, Friday night we lost, and I feel like driving home that night and getting home, I was pretty devastated. I was like, man, we have such a great opportunity here, and we just blew it. We knew we kind of needed to sweep them, and we were hoping that at that night, I was like, okay, if we win tomorrow, Saturday, which is Saturday and Sunday, there's still a really good shot we get in. And had that really awesome game Saturday, and everybody was erupting, and we were having a blast. And then Sunday just kind of fell apart on us, and ended up, you know, the teams we needed to lose didn't lose. And that kind of was just even more emotional with Seager send off. And yeah, I mean, a lot of great things to look back on, and a lot of areas that we can look back on and look to just kind of shore up and improve so that we can be in the playoffs next year and make it all the way to the World Series and win it.
Well, Mitch, you mentioned Seager, who is certainly a leader, but we also heard from some of your teammates that you're the rock in there. But as far as the core of leadership on this team, and I know it changes every year to year, but who are some of the guys that you're, and are you talking to those guys in the off season and talking about last season and what's going to happen next season? Tell us a little bit about the leaders on this team.
Yeah, I think as far as the position side goes, I think myself and JP and Tom Murphy and Ty France, those are the guys that have kind of emerged and are going to be looking to lead the group next year. And as far as the pitching staff goes, I know Marco's always been on the forefront and been a great leader for the pitchers. And I'm sure Paul and Steck and Diego, amongst other guys, will kind of fill that role as well and take the younger guys under the ropes and show them what it means to be a professional and how we go about our business and how we prepare to win. Those things are very important, very valuable on a team. And I think, especially with adding Robbie Ray, that's another guy who's been around the game for a while now and has had a ton of success. And he's going to be a great voice for the pitchers and for the rest of our team in our clubhouse. And I'm thrilled that he's joining our staff and our team.
Hey, Mitch, as far as your individual play goes, and I know you always focus on the team, but now that we're in the offseason, you have a chance to look back at your season. Only second time in your career you played 157 games, and in that article you wrote, you chronicle your injuries, and you've had a lot of bad luck there. But just physically, how did you feel throughout the season, and how much different was your preparation in the offseason in order to play that much? Because you had, 39 home runs, career high, 100 runs driven in, career high. A tremendous year for you, and playing that number of games, I've got to believe, incredibly satisfying. What did you change drastically in the offseason? What led to the season you just had?
As far as this offseason currently, there's not a whole lot I've changed. I've just tried to fine-tune some things. But going into last year, the offseason before, having missed a year and a half leading up to it, I'd taken all the stuff that I'd done previous to my surgeries and then added in a bunch of new stuff that focused on a lot more core, a lot more body awareness. And I've talked about this a few different times, so sorry if I'm beating the dead horse here. I've done a lot of different hanging, swinging, climbing, stuff that guys don't really, I guess, think about doing. And started working with a new trainer that has helped me a ton with my body and trying to focus on smaller areas where I was missing some strength. And, I still do my bulk heavy lifts that focus on the brute strength, but really fine-tuning my body. And so I could last, my goal every year is, to play as close as to 162 games as I can. And I felt like I had to strengthen areas that I had missed out on in years past. And I think the power surge, showed that. And I'm looking forward to building off it and coming back for even better 22.
Yeah, Mitch, the workouts, you know, we saw something on Twitter. It was really interesting to watch, you know, just the hanging stuff and all the different movements and everything that you did. How did you come about that? And then, you know, there's a whole bunch of different ways to get it done. But what was it about that particular path that appealed to you as far as rehabbing your injuries?
Just, I guess, the year before, kind of trying it. I think throughout the injuries, I've kind of tried everything, and I've discarded what I haven't found useful, and kept what I have found useful. And, you know, I met my trainer, Austin, right before I had all my surgeries, and I really liked his philosophy on strength training and just being a human first is one of his first things he says. You know, like, you want to move a lot, move correctly, and then we'll focus on being a better athlete after that. And I've taken on that approach and looked to build upon it this offseason. It's been very helpful. And I mean, for me, my body felt better and better as I was coming off of a whole bunch of surgeries. And so I knew this was the right way I needed to train for myself. And, for everybody, it's not the same, but I think the biggest thing as an athlete is you have to figure out, you have to master your own body. And for me, every year, I feel like I get better and better at knowing myself. So I know I'm continuing to get better, athletically, and that's been a huge part.
Hey, as far as the mental training goes, how big is that for you? Because I'm looking back, I think you and I debated on Twitter a bit over, it was actually a UFC fight, and I don't think you loved how the corner man was working with his fighter at the time, and I can't remember who it was, but it was kind of right. It was kind of negative, and you were basically saying, I'm paraphrasing, but hey man, that's, you know, that's kind of counterproductive. You don't want to hear what you're doing wrong. Tell me what I'm doing right or something. And I was saying, well, you know, it's his job to sort of correct them. Like, hey, you keep dropping your hand. You got to get that hand, whatever. So it just led me into the mental part of how you approach the sport. How much of that do you focus on?
A lot. I do a lot of reading. I'm a big fan of meditation, a big fan of visualization, affirmations, and, working on my subconscious mind. That's something that Edgar has taught me a lot and pushed me down that rabbit hole. That's been a big help for me. But yeah, I think the language in which we speak in is really powerful. And I think that, we have to be a little more careful with our words when we're talking about ourselves, because your subconscious doesn't know the difference between sarcasm and especially in that particular fight, I felt like, I'm not saying it's easy, but I think that coaches need to be very cautious with how they talk to their players or fighters. And in the heat of the fire, in the middle of a fight, sometimes you need to do something to fire the guy up. So, I think in that particular fight, the guy wasn't winning and he ended up winning. So I look back and I go, hey, the coach did a good job because he ended up winning the fight. But there's certain things I like to focus on the positives, and I like to, make positive changes when you're talking about the body and not focusing on the negative movements. I to reframe it positively, instead of saying, you know, don't pull your head out, it's keep your head on the ball all the way through contact. That's a positive thought. And I think those little adjustments can be very helpful, and they're undervalued.
It sounds like I'm screwed because I got lots of sarcasm going on in my brain. You said that's not a good thing. Hey, Mitch.
Well, I think you know, as an athlete, like there's always a little bit of doubt, and our mind tries to play tricks on us, and our mind tries to, you know, do certain things in order to keep us safe. And I feel like the more aware of the tendencies of where your mind will go, and just observing it, and not listening to your mind as if it's everything is fact. You know, if my thoughts were spilled out of my mouth, every thought, people would think I'm crazy. But there's certain things I discard, and there's certain things I pay attention to. And then I also am trying to be conscious and push my mind down the rabbit hole I want it to go down, as opposed to getting off whack.
Yeah. Well, that's really interesting. I think it's really important for baseball players too, because it's just such a your sport. It's just such a long grind, you know. And then we talk about the mental side of it, but also, you know, the support. I'm talking about you being described as the rock, and your rock is Amanda, your wife. But also, you talked a little bit about your family. Tell us about you mentioned the trainers as well that you have, but tell us about your support group and what that meant to you when you were going through all of this adversity.
yeah, my wife was really big for me, and she's always been there for me. So I owe a lot of, if not all, a lot of my success to her. And having, missing a year where during COVID times my wife was pregnant, there were some positives for me that came out of it. I got to spend way more time with her and make sure we were being safe and to bring my daughter in the world. And my daughter just turned one about a month and a half ago. And the off season's been great to spend more time with them, because in season, didn't get a whole lot of time with her with the travel and just with how long we were at the field every single day. And even on home games, it's, you're only with your family for a couple hours every day. So the off season's really great to soak that time in and to try to help out a little bit more than I can during the season, because she does pretty much everything for our family. Yeah. So she's been amazing.
Hey, Mitch, last thing before we ask you about the Sports Star of the Year awards, I got to ask you, just any doubt in your mind that we're going to get a full season this year? Obviously, we're in the middle of a lockout, which absolutely stinks for me as a baseball fan. Yeah. And all baseball fans, especially coming off the season you guys just had, all the momentum the league had. The timing is awful.
Right.
But are you fearful that, hey, we're gonna get an abbreviated spring training, or maybe not get 162 in? How are you feeling about that?
I like to stay positive and hope that everything's going to go smoothly. And I think for me, that's the only thing I'm focusing on. I'm focusing on showing up to spring, hopefully the same time I always do, and getting ready and prepared to win a World Series, like I said. And I think there was a lot of, buzz around our city and within the game. And it is, pretty unfortunate that the league and the owners implemented the lockout. I feel like this was a little unnecessary, and I feel like this is a fact that they didn't need to do it, and we could have kept on having a normal offseason as far as trades and signs go, and we could have had negotiations going on in the background and hopefully come to an agreement sooner than later. But that's not the route that was taken, and I hope that things get handled and for the fans' sake, because we all want to play for you guys and have another year of great baseball.
Yeah, couldn't agree with that more. It didn't need to happen. All right, as we said, the 87th Annual Sports Star of the Year Awards, which is presented by Seattle Sports Commission, is happening Thursday, May 26th. It's such a great event that's held every year, and you are one of seven nominees for Men's Sports Star of the Year. The last Mariners player, by the way, to win, I believe, is Felix Hernandez in 2009. So That's a long gap, Mitch. It's up to you, man.
Yeah,
it's up to you. Yeah. It's got to be a huge honor, though, just to even be nominated, I would think, right?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, I was super grateful for the nomination, and fingers crossed that hopefully I can win it. And I think that would mean a lot to me and my family, and also to the Mariners organization.
Good luck, Mitch.
Yeah, and people, I should let people know that you can vote. The voting runs until January 23rd. You can go to sportsstaroftheyear.org/vote. sportsstaroftheyear.org/vote. Cast your vote there until January 23rd. The event happens May 26th. Mitch, it's always a pleasure to speak with you, man. Thanks so much for taking the time. We love talking to you, and I'm going to nail you down one day. You and I are going to sit down and talk MMA for a good 15, 20 minutes.
Let's
one day.
Let's do it. Yeah, we got some good fights coming up.
Absolutely. We appreciate you, man. Thanks so much.
Thank you guys for having me. I appreciate it.
There you go. Mitch Haniger.
What a guy.
How do you not love that guy?
Man, he has become, and just reflecting, like I said, going back to 2016, if you just say, hey, look, you're going to get here, but here's the route. Here's the path you're going to take.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
Well, so, how about the idea that as a double-A player, I mean, your dream as a baseball player is to climb the ranks. You're going from low-A to high-A to double-A to, you just climb that ladder. And to get to double-A and then go, you know what, coach, goes to the director of player personnel, send me down to single-A. I mean, that's rare, man. And it makes sense what he said about, hey, I'm just sitting on the bench at double A. I'm going to get better. I'm going to get my reps at single A and prove I can play this game.
He's an incredibly special athlete. His thoughtfulness, the mental side of it that he's putting into it. I can't see anything but success for him going forward.
Yeah, he's big on the mental. We debated a little bit on Twitter. We were both watching a UFC fight, and the corner was kind of – letting their fighter hear it. Like, what are you doing? You keep dropping your hand. You're doing this. And, you know, kind of negative, I guess. But, and he was like, hey, and he tweeted out something along the lines of, hey, you got to use positive reinforcement, blah, blah, blah. And I was more of the, you know, hey, he's got to tell them what they're doing wrong or they're going to get knocked out. It was just, you got a glimpse into his mental side. But just great conversation with Mitch Haniger. If you missed any of that, head to 710sports.com. You can search Wyman and Bob on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your podcasts. Click subscribe. It'll be there for you after the show. All right, coming up, we're taking a closer look at the Seahawks defense with America's new favorite game show, Overachiever, Underachiever. Coming your way next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
You're listening to Wyman and Bob, brought to you by Angel of the Winds Casino Resort on 710 ESPN Seattle.
Now, here are your hosts, Dave Wyman and Bob Stelton.
Our thanks to Mitch Haniger, who joined us in the previous segment. If you guys missed that, man, what a good dude. What
you think that guy's put together mentally and physically? I mean, geez.
Yeah.
I wish I'd have had that kind of knowledge and, you know, perspective when I was an athlete. I mean, amazing.
Yeah.
Amazing guy.
Really, really good conversation. Just a good dude. A lot of you texting in. Tell Mitch we love him. Tell Mitch we love him.
Yeah.
he is beloved in this city, man. And just an incredible dude. Incredible year they just had. So if you missed that conversation again, you'll find it after the show, 710sports.com on our podcast page. Just click the podcast tab and click on our picture. It'll be right there. We'll tweet out the links because that's one you want everybody to hear. He's a very thoughtful guy, and a lot of good parts of that conversation. Meanwhile, we did this a little earlier, just taking a look at some players on the Seahawks roster and determining whether they overachieved or underachieved. Forced to make a decision. There's no achieved. It's got to be one or the other. So we took a look at Shane Waldron and Russell Wilson earlier. We came to the conclusion they both underachieved. These aren't personal. This is just what did they produce on the field. So now we take a look. Now this is going to be hard. This is a tough one. Let's start with Carlos Dunlap because, man, this was an incredibly easy answer through week 12 where I believe he had half a sack. And we're scratching our heads going, what in the heck happened to this guy? Gave you five. He played eight games for the Seahawks last year, five sacks. Looked like, oh, man, imagine him, 17-game season. What's he going to do? Through 12 weeks, he had a half a sack. He ended the season with 8.5 sacks and led the team, Dave. So, I mean,
whose fault was it?
I'm putting it on the coaches. I mean, he had five games where he played 20 snaps or less. How do you even justify that? 20 snaps. He had just four snaps, Dave. Four against the Washington football team. Seven snaps against San Francisco. How do you justify that?
Well, and then he made him count in San Francisco, at least. A sack and the
pass deflection. Yeah.
Pass deflection. So, yeah, I have no idea, man. I mean, and if you're not putting him out there, then he can't really control that. Now, did he – that was – oh, boy, man. You know, these next two players, Carlos and Bobby Wagner, I was talking about Wagner being the biggest mystery to me, how they used him. But, you know, as far as utilization goes, I can't put it on Carlos Dunlap. And especially – the fact I talked to him twice, you and I talked to him once, and you know, that's when we first started to hear the frustration. It was after the Green Bay game. So how do you say he's an underachiever with those numbers you just mentioned? 11 snaps in two games.
Inexcusable.
And, yeah. And percentage wise, that's like, I have the number somewhere, but it's like, you know, 10%. You know, 15, I mean, my gosh. And I get it with linemen, you've got to rotate those guys in and out.
Yeah.
But the explanation was that, well, we were trying to get some other guys. I was like, what other guys? Yeah. So I'm sorry, I'm not putting it on Carlos Dunlap. You know, 8.5 sacks in five games.
Led the team. I'm going to say based on the amount of time he played and how he was used, he overachieved. For him to, again, 11 snaps in two complete games, and he's totally healthy, and he played a total of 11 snaps, and he ends the season with 8.5 leading the team. I'm going to say he overachieved. He did that in spite of the fakakta way they used him.
Agreed. Yeah, and then, you know, you didn't even mention your favorite new thing to complain about. dropping him into coverage.
That's right.
I used to be the only one that would mention that. And I think once you start to hear the players, I mean, you and I interviewed Daryl Taylor. We've interviewed, player after player. They don't like it, man. They don't they don't want to drop back. So, but yeah, I'm looking at the percentages, like 5% of the snaps against Washington football team, 12% against San Francisco. So, you can't really look at the raw number, but you can, in this case, percentage-wise, and even against Detroit, he was 24%. I think, did he get a sack in that one? I don't think he did, but yeah, it's just it's amazing. I'm totally with you. He is an overachiever based on the number of snaps, and if you project that out, and how many quarterback, if you found like a good number, like 45-50%. Actually, for him, I'd say 55-60%.
Yeah.
Because, look, linebackers can play 100% of the time. But for your defensive players, you want to try to get them rested and have them well rested out there. But 65-70%, I would think that you would have him on the field. His highest number was 62. And as you mentioned, his lowest number was 5%.
5%. It's just, and I get it. Listen, it's not like every time he went out there, he produced and, there are games, there were moments where he went out there and he didn't always get something done. But the idea that there was a justification to play him just 4 snaps in a game is mindless. I'm sorry. Unless he's hurt, it's inexcusable.
And listen to this. When you go back when he got his games as a Seahawk, 68% last year, 68%, 73%, 76%, 54%. He dropped down to 33% against the Washington football team. This is 2020 again, but then it went 60, 55. So, if you're giving him those number of snaps, shoot, he might have, he might have 15, 16 sacks.
Yeah. All right. So we're both on the same page. He overachieved. All right. Here's the tough one, Dave. Bobby Wagner, 170 tackles, third most in the NFL, and he missed basically 2 full games. He had 1 sack, 3 tackles for a loss, 1 interception, 1 forced fumble, played 100% of the defensive snaps through the first 15 games, hurt on the first play in game 16. But it was a year, if we're just talking about impact and what you expect from a guy being paid, I think you have to take into account who he is, what the expectations are, and what he's being paid.
Yeah.
What do you say?
Yeah, I'd say underachieved just because, you look at, the numbers are definitely there, but isn't this another one though, Bob, where you go, how was he used? Why was he used that way? Why was he the way I put it was like he was the safety of the tackle box. Like he was going to kind of hang back, check boot, check cutback, not attack on the play side. That's the way they played him. And so I don't really understand that. That one's, I don't even think I can answer this question.
Yeah, I would just say based on what we've come to expect and the way he was used, some of which I don't know that they're telling him don't take on blocks, catch blocks. Then it's hard to decipher what was going on with him. The raw numbers you look at, but you've been a great teacher, and hey, yeah, tackles are awesome. That's what you're paid to do. But look at where those tackles are made versus where they could be made if you play aggressive, if you attack the line of scrimmage. I think there's a lot to that that gets by, casual fans. You're just not trained to look at linebackers in that it's not as obvious as wide receivers and running backs and the skill players, if you will.
Yeah, but clearly they weren't making him, or, that wasn't required by him. Because he pretty much did that all year long. So then you throw it back on the coaching staff.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, I'm going to have to go with you on that one. I'm going to go Carlos overachieved. I'm going to say Bobby underachieved. All right. Coming up, it is Wednesday. So we play What If Wednesday. And the hypothetical question we throw out is, what if the Seahawks had fired Ken Norton during the season? It's coming up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.
What?
What? What?
It's time for What If Wednesday.
Coach would have put me in fourth quarter. We'd have been state champions, no doubt.
Wyman and Bob rewrite the scripts of major moves and moments in sports every Wednesday afternoon. Now step into an alternative reality with Wyman and Bob.
We always have to get this in before we speak with John Clayton, who will join us at the top of the hour because, as we've learned over the years, he does not like to play hypotheticals. So today's hypothetical question is, what if, Dave, what if Ken Norton had been fired in the middle of the season? How different might the season have turned out? Now, I guess some of that would be determined by, all right, does, I don't know, Clint Hurt take over? Do they hire somebody from the outside who may have been available? I mean, that's a huge part of it, but what do you think would have happened?
Well, first of all, based on what I've heard about Ken, is that everybody loves him.
Yeah.
And you can understand that, having talked to him, right?
Yeah.
So that would have, as far as morale goes, I don't think that would have been a good move. And I'll give Clayton credit for that. He's actually, you know, he talked a lot about what he means to those guys. And not so much this year because KJ wasn't there, but he meant a ton to Bobby and KJ and just the spirit of it. The other thing about it is that the only thing I could figure is, first of all, you would have Clint Hurt probably run it. Mm-hmm. And then what Clint would have had to have done is just keep things really simple. Now, on the upside of that, maybe that's what they need. You know, maybe there's too much of about scheming and you know, overthinking things and just say, hey, we're going to line up. They're going to know what we're going to do, but we're going to do it better. We're going to execute, you know. We're going to – when we drop back in a 12-yard zone, we're not jumping 5-yard routes. When we, you know, it's a short yardage, we're going to attack offensive linemen. I showed you that – I sent you guys a video as over the weekend or just the other day where the two 49er linebackers, I think it's Greenlaw and Fred Warner. Yeah, it's a run play. They identify and they just attack the line of scrimmage. Just attack. Yeah, and you saw that happening a little bit more. So, you know, on one hand, maybe if keeping it simple, but I think overall it probably was not going to be a good move.
Yeah, and I get that perspective. And by the way, What If Wednesday is presented by Pendergast Law, personal injury lawyers. I get that. But I do wonder if you did go in-house, if you did say, all right, well, at least interim, it's going to be Clint Hurt. So that lessens the sting. Hey, it's a guy we know, we work with each and every day. And you never know, a guy sitting in that same room, sitting behind the scenes going, why isn't he holding this guy accountable? Or why isn't he getting up in this guy's grill and telling him, hey, you can't do that? Or, you know, so maybe he institutes a little bit more discipline. Not that there's going to be a radical scheme change, because that would be foolish in the middle of the season, but maybe just a more of an emphasis on some of the things you talked about, Schlereth talked about, just, you know, kind of emphasizing what, who does what well, we're going to have them do that. We're not going to try to, you know, put the square peg into the round hole type of situation. We're going to do what fits, not a dramatic change, but just kind of do what we did the year previous when you had impact plays and you had impact players. I can't help but think it might have been a bit of a wake-up call to the players on that side of the ball who might take ownership and feel like, hey, yeah, we all love Ken. And had we been doing our jobs, had we been, you know, minding our gaps, if you will, and doing exactly what we're supposed to do, maybe we're not in this position where we're mad that he's gone. I mean, some of that falls on the players. Yeah, the coach is ultimately, yeah, the buck stops with the coach. But, hey, man, you know, you guys are getting paid a lot of money to go out there and execute the fundamentals, and you didn't, and it resulted in your coach being fired.
Yeah. Well, and then as a coach, I mean, you could help yourself, too, by benching people.
Yeah, yeah.
You know,
right.
And effectively, that's kind of what they did with Carlos Dunlap. I don't know what the deal is with him. Maybe, hey, look, maybe Carlos Dunlap is a malcontent or something. I don't know. He sure doesn't seem like it. And he sure seems like a guy that kind of tells it like it is. But remember at the end of the year, he's like, well, I had a good year last year, and they cut me.
They cut me. Yeah, that was what he's talking to Sylvie.
Yeah, but you know, what Lefko wrote in here, which, first of all, I said, I thought you wrote in here, we got Colt McCoy. It says Colt McCoy led
Cardinals.
So, and it was McCoy. Yeah, we got Nick Foles in the Bears game, right? Which,
yeah, and you had Heinicke for Washington.
Heinicke, yeah. I mean, there's three games right there that Mike's talking about in the show sheet there that now you're talking about 9-8 or 10-7. So, you know, maybe those things don't happen. But I think overall it probably would have been bad for morale. And then the other thing, that's a drastic move, you know. I mean, no matter what you want to say, I remember 2018 or 19, we played the Vikings, and I remember in the postgame show, Paul Moyer was like, which we have Paul on every week, but he's like, they got to fire their offensive coordinator. They just do.
In the middle of the season?
Yeah. And next day, fired. Offensive coordinator fired for the Minnesota Vikings. So, yeah, it was pretty good call by Moyer there.
But, wow, he's got some juice.
I know, but you don't really see – well, because Paul, he coached for a long time.
Yeah.
And, you know, he's coached high school football, I know, as well, but – you can identify pretty easily when a guy looks lost and, you know, his players aren't playing for him. And that's the thing, that's the sort of factor there with Ken Norton that's different, because his players loved him. But again, like you said, then if you loved him so much, how come you didn't, you know, hustle on every play and hit on every play? And, you know, it kind of was like, yeah, we're not communicating.
Yeah.
Well, why not? I mean, unless it was just that he made it so confusing that they couldn't do it. I don't know. I didn't really ever hear any kind of an ill word coming from any of the players about Ken.
No, it was the opposite, as a matter of fact, which unfortunately this is how it ended, and maybe it does serve as a wake-up call. By the way, who were the top athletes of 2021? Well, you can help the Seattle Sports Commission choose the sports stars and stories of the year by voting for the 87th Annual Sports Star of the Year Awards. You can find info about voting for the May event at 710sports.com/events. All right, coming up, we got the Professor John Clayton. If you guys have questions for John, you can text those in right now to 421-3776, 421-ESPN, powered by Mac and Jack's Brewing Company. He comes up next with Wyman and Bob on 710 ESPN Seattle.